My name is Terry G, and this is Oral History Interviews being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared memories of one of our members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express written consent of the member being interviewed and the Area 53 Archives Committee. Today, we're interviewing John B. from Columbus, Ohio. His sobriety date is April 2nd, 1980, and his home group is Open Door Group, which meets on Wednesday evenings at 7:15. So, John, I'm just going to jump right in, and we'll just take it as it goes. So please tell me a little bit about your life before you found Alcoholics Anonymous, such as where you were born, what it was like growing up, maybe what you did for a living, etc.
I was born and raised in Worthington, Ohio. And, you know, I used to think that my childhood was jacked up, you know, until I got to the meetings and found out that it was just the way it was. You know, I was blessed to have a bunch of friends. You know, they were family. Some of them had 8 kids, some of them had 5 kids. So we all hung together, and that made a pretty good childhood. I don't have the list of questions in front of me, so I don't know.
Okay, that's okay. No worries. You want to talk about when you started, if you were in a relationship, did you end up getting married, having children? And then maybe, or if that ties into when you started drinking, you could start there as well.
Started drinking in high school. I was really into sports, and I always had a bad attitude, and so I did some things that they didn't like. So I got kicked out of sports. Then I found the people that drank, and I started drinking with them. And, you know, truthfully, I didn't like the taste of alcohol, but I wanted the effect. I was willing to pay any price to get the effect. When I was drinking, there was a period of time when I did get married, and that didn't last long. And I was still going strong. It didn't work out well. So we got divorced, and kind of work I did back then, worked in a grocery store, and I was managing departments. And of course, the alcohol played a good part of that. You know, one thing that's funny is because I thought when I worked in this grocery store, I thought that any kind of beer or alcohol that came across the counter, I was supposed to try, you know, so I drank some pretty bad stuff. But anyway, I found out that wasn't the answer either.
Can you talk about how drinking contributed to unmanageability in your life and maybe when you hit your bottom?
Yeah, the unmanageability came. Of course, I didn't know. You know, everybody saw it but me. You know, it cost me my marriage, cost me my job, cost me my vehicles, cost me just about everything. And I still didn't know that I had a problem. You know, I just thought that I was having fun, and I thought everybody drank that way, and they did because the people I hung with drank that way. And I knew my bottom was, I knew I was going to die in a fiery car crash. I've had 4 OMVIs, totaled so many cars, and I knew that I knew how it was going to end. I was blessed because one of the families that I grew up near, you know, their dad was in the program. He never talked to me about it, never even mentioned it, other than the fact that, you know, he's probably trying to give me a hint, but he never mentioned it, never said anything, never said that I should try it. It's just one day I got in an accident the last night that I drank, and it wasn't any worse than the other ones. I mean, I had to go to the hospital and have a couple stitches, but the difference between that one and all the other one was, I guess, the grace of God told me, hey, look, you know, you're gonna have to do something about this. And plus, you know, I everybody was on me. You know, all my friends were on me. All the people that I cared about were on me. And I called this guy up and told him what was going on. And he said, well, do you want to come down and talk about it? And fortunately, he lived in walking distance. So I walked down to his house, and he told me you know, I said, man, I'm in trouble. Yeah, I never want to drink again. And he said, that's not what we say in the program. He said, we just take it a day at a time. And, you know, that didn't mean jack to me. I didn't care about that. I just knew I was in trouble and hurting, and thought I wanted to do something about it. So the next day, that was on a Saturday. The next day was Sunday morning. And he said, I go to a meeting on Sunday morning. He said, it's the Columbus Sunday morning breakfast. And it met on at the old L&K at that time.
Wow.
So he said, I'll be by and I'll pick you up at 8 o'clock. And, you know, I'm thinking, whoa, that's awful early. I don't, you know, but I kept my mouth shut. You know, 8 o'clock he came and I was ready, because I knew I was afraid of this guy growing up, you know, so kind of carried on. And he took me to meet, he became my sponsor, you know. So I was fortunate that I didn't have to go out and look for one, or, you know, the one was, you know, right in front of me. And I was blessed for that.
That's wonderful. What were your first impressions of Alcoholics Anonymous?
I thought it sucked. I didn't like it. You know, I didn't think I was that bad and that I needed to be there. You know, my sponsor would take me to meetings. And one day I got this bright idea when I was walking down to his house that I wonder how I can tell him I don't need to go to as many meetings as he does. That maybe, you know, one a week will do. And man, I tell you what, my higher power watched over me so hard, because I never had the nerve to tell him that. I just kept my mouth shut, got in the car and went to meeting. There were a lot of good people that I met. You know, I went to the post office meeting, and that was a great meeting. And I went to the Worthington group, which was my home group at that time. And, you know, these people keep talking to me, you know, and I'm saying, man, I don't want to hear anything you have to say. Yeah, you know, I wouldn't tell them that. I would just, and they didn't have to tell me to, you know, to shut up and not say anything, because I was quiet anyway, and I didn't talk much. So eventually it did take hold, and I don't know when it was, but I remember I used to get in the shower, man, I'd be kicking and screaming, dang God, I gotta go to a meeting. And I don't know when it happened, but I do remember one time I was saying, you know, I was glad, you know, that I was going to a meeting, you know, and I was looking forward to it. And that's when I knew that there was a change, and you know, the things were going to be all right. I still hesitant, still, you know, like kind of, you know, apprehensive. But I knew that's the only shot I had. You know, I didn't know at that time if I could stay sober, or if I would, you know, still want to. But I did at that time. I gave it my best, and fortunately it did work out.
You want to share anything about your experiences in working the 12 steps with your sponsor, and what kind of groups did you go to? What were the formats like?
Yeah, working the steps with my sponsor, you know, we did it straight out of the big book. But I didn't. There were a couple of them I balked on. You know, I didn't really get into the fifth step with him. As a matter of fact, I did the fifth step with my pastor, my minister, and my sponsor would have done it with me, but he said, you know, like, if you don't feel comfortable, he said, you know, go to wherever you feel comfortable. And the 12 steps, I tried to work them as best I could at first, you know, and then I found out what they were really about and how important they were. And people keep telling me, if you don't work the 12 steps, you know, go stay sober. And at that point, I wanted to stay sober. And so we went through the steps and tried to be as honest as I could, you know. And that was the first time. Of course, I've worked them since then, you know, and got more in depth, and really started paying attention and really wanting, you know, what this program had to offer. Meetings I went to speaker meetings. He didn't go, my sponsor didn't go to discussions or literature meetings. It didn't mean that I couldn't, but I didn't. You know, I just stuck with him and went to speaker meetings and So that's what I did first few years. That's what I did. I went to speaker meetings. Like I said, I went to Worthington and the post office and the Columbus Sunday morning breakfast. And that was
conferences or special AA events that were especially meaningful to you?
I got conned in. Well, I shouldn't say that. Anyway, I got talked into being GSR of the Worthington group. And so I don't know what a GSR does. And they said, well, we'll show you. And they did. And they said, well, you go to the area assemblies and, and you're the voice of the home group. So, I didn't have an issue with that. Some people, service work just kills them. But for some reason, I loved it. Then I got active and, well, I didn't get active. They elected me secretary, so I was secretary, treasurer. Then had a friend, Sharon, and she, we were really good friends. And she got me really, really active in service work. And she, she explained to me what all it was. So I was DCM of our district. Then I met Bill S. And Bill S. was awesome, and he helped me, through the DCM, and Sharon got me active in the area. I became alternate recording secretary. Then I became recording secretary, and that was as far as I wanted to go. I didn't want to be chair. Didn't want to be delegate, that wasn't going to be the end of my service work. I did service mostly, group level, but I didn't go much farther than that. Even though, the area, I still was involved and still went. I love the Area 53 conferences. Man, they were really instrumental in my sobriety in the beginning, and I went to just about all of them, and I'd go to different AA functions like dances and stuff like that, and really started learning that there was more to the program than just going to meetings, and I really loved the service work and the many conferences. I went to those and really enjoyed that part.
You mentioned a sponsor. Have you had to switch sponsors? What was that like? And if you sponsor people, tell me a little bit more about that.
My first sponsor, I had him for 18 years, and he passed away. But he was a gentle giant. I mean, all he had to do was say, this is what you do, and this is how you act, and that was all he had to say. And I was. I was all on board, and anytime I had issues, his house was always open, and I always lived within walking distance. So, I could walk down to his house, and sometimes we wouldn't even talk AA. Sometimes I would just go down just to sit with him. And a couple of times I'd wake up and they'd all be, house would be dark. They'd be in bed. So I locked the door and walked home. And the next day I said, why didn't you wake me up? And he said, well, you're probably not sleeping that good. So I just thought I'd let you go ahead and get a good sleep. But we worked well together. And after I lost him, Worthington Group was my home group at that point. And I know what happens to people that don't have sponsors, but of course I drug my feet, and Sharon came up to me one day and she said, did you get a sponsor yet? I said, nah, not yet. She said, okay. So she asked me again, and I did. Fortunately, I did have one. This guy, didn't know him. He was active in Area 53 and was ANDT, and I didn't know him. And he called me up one day and said, is there any, because, Pete had passed away, and he said, what do you need? And I said, well, I need a sponsor. And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, we'll meet for lunch, and we'll talk about it. And he'll say, I'll tell you what I expect, and you can tell me what you expect from a sponsor. And so we met for lunch, and at the end of the day, you know, he didn't ask anything from me that I wasn't willing to do. He was, man, I mean, he had like a photographic memory. He was a big book thumper, man. He had all the answers. I could go to him and say, you know, like with a question, and say, I don't know where to find this. And he could give me the page and where to find it in the big book. And we would read the 12 traditions and 12 steps. We'd read different AA literatures. We would read Living Sober, and AA Comes of Age. But anyway, he got me really into the reading the literature, really studying the literature. And my first sponsor, he was good for me. But Andy, he showed me a different route. So we were more into reading, and he had sponsees. We connected. I got to know them, and we all got along good, and we all worked good together. His wife got transferred out of town. So I had to keep changing sponsors, but it wasn't because I didn't like what one was telling me, or it was just, you know, situations. And then I got a sponsor, Dean F. And I knew Dean from when I first came in, and I knew what kind of sponsor he was, and I knew what he expected of the people he sponsored. And, you know, that met at his house once a week. He'd give you homework. I was good with that too. I was. So he was an awesome sponsor too. And he taught me a lot more about what the program was all about, and different aspects of the program. And he taught me about the inside person, the inside guy. And we worked on that a lot. Then he moved out of town. Well, Andy T, when I had him, his home group was the Open Door. So that's how I became Open Door. And I just stayed with it. Even though I changed sponsors, I stayed with the Open Door. But I went to one meeting a week that my sponsor went to. Because my Andy would say, look, he said, you got to go to a meeting that I go to. Because when I ask you if you're okay, he said, I want to look in your eyes and see if you're full of crap. So I always liked that. So I, you know, if they weren't my home group, Dean F, I didn't join his home group, but I met him once a week. And Dean moved away, drawing a blank.
That's okay. Let's, maybe this will help jog your memory. Talk about how these meetings and work in the sponsors you mentioned, how did they welcome newcomers and encourage them to stay in the groups?
My home group, we used to have greeters, and we would have people at the door to welcome, you know, everybody in. And if they were new, then we had a newcomers packet, and we'd, you know, the women with women and men with men. And we would grab them and we'd talk to them after the meeting. Try to encourage them, you know, to come back, you know, of course, get a sponsor and read the literature. And we stayed on them. Some of them, you know, as you know, they don't all stay. But we worked hard and tried to get their attention. And, you know, some of them, you know, they said, it's not for me. But they were always welcoming to reach out for the newcomer.
Do you remember a time or where a situation or an issue came up amongst your home group and within your home group, maybe a controversy and what, how that was resolved or how you guys worked through that?
Yeah. The Open Door, we used to be really tight. We go to dinner, we do things outside together. And one day, this guy, there was an altercation. The guy got slammed through a door, and it didn't work too well after that. You know, a lot of people left because of that. Uh-huh. So we had that, it got resolved with some of the people, but a lot of the people that had been in that group for a long time, it turned them off. So they went and started their own group. But usually if we have controversies now, you know, we just sit down and we try to work it out. And, you know, like, you know, you're not always going to get your way, but so what, you know, you do what's best for the group. And so we got to learn something from that. But
right.
One thing I learned early on is that people are people, you know, and it doesn't matter whether you're in the program or you're not in, you know, people are going to be people. And there's a lot of friction and controversy between some people, you know, just because they're in the program, it doesn't mean everybody's about the right thing. Because I trusted everybody when I first came in, and I learned quickly that you can't do that. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I always treat people fair and expected to be treated fair.
Do you have any experiences that were that stand out to you with our intergroup, our central office, that you want to share?
No.
Okay.
I mean, that when I came in, we're at 1706. Man, that saved me. Because I spent a lot of time down there. So I have nothing but, you know, praise for our intergroup or central office.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions where, you know, that where you've seen something that you'd want to continue in Alcoholics Anonymous or opportunities for growth?
Well, I have some opinions, but, you know, like, I'm old school. So I have to be flexible, you know, and I have to accept change. And I know that I ran with some people and had people in meetings that were hardcore and they weren't going to change. I found out, you know, nothing stays the same. It's always change. And, you know, as long as it's, you know, for the better, like, different things that come up. There was a meeting that was shut down because somebody, you know, talked about drugs. When I first came in, that was a no-no in my home group, you know, and it still is to a lot of people. But I try to make everybody welcome, you know, because things are different now. You know, people are different, and there's going to you probably won't find very many true alcoholics, you know, and you have to be welcome to everybody. And but there's not been anything that's happened that, you know, that I can't handle or that would turn me against, you know, going to meetings.
So how did the COVID-19 pandemic affect groups that you attend on, you know, just in general? And what are some of your thoughts about that time period?
Tore a lot of them apart, you know, it shut all of them down. But we did Zoom. Of course, you do Zoom, so you understand, you know, you can't talk to anybody one-on-one. I don't know. I just found it strange. You know, I still went to meetings, still, you know, listened to leads, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't like being able to shake hands or hug somebody or really, you know, get the full benefit. I appreciate the Zoom meetings and really have a lot of respect for them, because if they hadn't come up with that, you know, what? You know, we'd have been in trouble. Mm-hmm. I would have been in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So but I tell you what, when they meetings started opening up, and I, you know, got comfortable with the Zoom meetings. And I, like I said, had to force myself. And then now I'm back out going to meetings and all is good. But it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. It really was.
So before I conclude this interview, John, is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think we about covered it all.
Okay.
Is there anything else you want to ask me? I mean,
I think you covered most everything that I asked about. I want to thank you for your time and sharing your story with us. That's really helpful.
You're more than welcome. I learned early on, you don't say no in AA, so.